Hello, and welcome to another episode of The Spice Must Flow, otherwise known as The Cosmic Circle. We're the companion podcast for thecosmiccircus.com, and today we're talking all about Dune Part 2. I'm joined by some very special guests, Uday Kataria and John Dotson.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey everyone, super excited to be talking Dune today.
As a fair warning, there will be spoilers in this podcast. Do not listen unless you're willing to accept our podcast's ascendancy or something like that. And for the record, because I think I forgot to say it, I'm Isla Ruby, and I'm very excited to be talking with you guys too. Outside of that, let's get right into it. Did you like Dune Part 2? And what are your overall thoughts on the newest movie, Worshipping the Sandworm?
I have a lot of thoughts on Dune Part 2. I want to preface them by saying I think it's a good movie. I think it may even be a great movie. But I do feel like it's overrated and like really overhyped.
Tell us what you really think.
I liked it. I did, but just the way that everyone's talking about it, I don't think it's the second coming of God, and that's how people are treating it online.
How about you, John? What do you think?
I enjoyed the first Dune film, but I didn't like love it. So my expectations going into my press screening were not like through the roof. So whenever I went into my press event, I was knocked out of my wheelchair. So yeah, I liked it a lot. I think there are some valid criticisms for the movie, but I think it's a technical, brilliant film all the way around, and I think just on a visual effects level, I think it's brilliant. The story can be debated, but on the technical side, I think it's incredible.
See, I have a lot of issues with the story side and character side because that's what I te tend to lean into. And I, Uday, you guys can't see this because we're not a video podcast, but Uday is like rubbing his hands together, silently going, "Mwah ha ha," as we say that, because he's got, thoughts that I'm sure we're going to hear in a minute. I thought, for Dune Part 2, I thought this film was nice. It was good. Like you guys, I don't think it's the second coming of anything. And I didn't see Dune Part 1, so maybe I'm missing something. I know Uday, again, Uday is making like a look like I'm a crazy person. So I went into this film without any baggage except the 1983 film and the book. Yeah. But John, before we go on to our next question, I want to dig into what you said a little bit because you said from like a technical standpoint, this was a really good film. And I remember we talked about on, I think it was a podcast last year, or maybe it was in like Discord DMs, like about some of last year's films compared to, let's say, maybe Oppenheimer and the technical stuff of that. What do you think?
I did not like Oppenheimer.
Ooh.
I was not a big fan of Oppenheimer. I didn't even say the name, but I think, kind of like Uday, I thought Oppenheimer was a little overrated. It's good. It's a good movie. I wasn't like I said, knocked out of my wheelchair over it, but as far as like Dune, I wrote a review about it. The way I feel about it when I was watching the film, when you watch Avatar, like both films, like it's incredible on a visual effects front, like the things that James Cameron can pull off. But I can still tell it's CGI. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like I can still see it on the screen. Like I know it's going to age out the way I feel about it.
Are you saying that this one has a more timeless quality?
There are sequences in this movie I just don't understand how they did it. Like, it looks like I'm staring at Arrakis in the way. Like, there's one part in this film where, like, one of those mining machines, like, gets, like, blown up, and it looks practical. It
Sorry
doesn't
for the
look
spice, you
fake.
mean?
Yeah, when it's, like, trying to dig the spice. It looks real. And I can't think of, okay, I know what I'm trying to say. It makes Star Wars look lazy. I'm just saying. It really does.
Well,
Because,
I see that. Is this like
yeah.
st the Star Wars of, is it 50 years? No, it's not 50 years ago at this point, is it? Is it the Star Wars of decades ago, or is it like the recent Star Wars that's lazy?
The recent ones, the old ones got an excuse. Like they pour 300 million into a Star Wars movie every time, and it doesn't look near as good as what I watched 2 weeks ago. And
I
yeah, go ahead.
actually like I completely agree with that. When you were saying that, like, you can see that, like, everything in Avatar is CGI, I was like a little bit offended on James Cameron's behalf. But I get what you're saying, because, like, the first Avatar movie has not aged gracefully to me. Like, they look like video game characters now.
Well, they had
And
to invent technology, so let's just, give them that. Like, the technology didn't exist.
Keep in mind, I love The Way of Water. I love it. I saw it twice.
Yeah,
I saw it
I
twice.
actually really loved Way of Water as well, because I didn't remember. Well, I was 9 when I saw the first movie in theaters, and so I basically didn't remember anything except the big flying thing, because it reminded me of a pterodactyl. But I really liked Way of Water. And to me, like, Way of Water is, like, far superior to Dune. But I think that I click with Avatar more. I like the alien stuff more, and I definitely like the water more. I feel like I hate sand, and so there's something where, like, I'm not connecting with Dune the same way that everyone else is. So I'm really happy for everyone else, but I just don't get it. Like, I like the story, but then I feel like I just need to read the book to get the story, because I haven't read the book yet. I want to, but to me, the movies are now consistently, like, not doing enough for me in regards to that. So I think that the Dune movies are incredible from like a filmmaking perspective. I think everything is, like, off the charts. And again, like, John, what you were saying about budgets, like how did Killers of the Flower Moon cost more actually than Dune Part Two? Like,
You would be
I don't.
surprised, like
Yes.
authentic
Yes.
costumes and manpower
Exactly.
and like there's a lot of
And
stuff there, and we could go into a whole side
do.
discussion. I just want to jump in there, like about paying VFX people fairly and paying like the people who actually make the stuff look really freaking cool fairly and like non-union work. So when you're talking about budgets, that's how like Dune stuff may be able to get away with a smaller budget.
Oh,
And
actually, yeah,
bear in mind, oh,
the
sorry.
cast salaries came out today, and no one's getting paid $20 million in Dune, so I'm sure that has something to do with it.
I just want to say I fully support every visual effects artist out there. Y'all work very hard, and you're probably being treated like slaves by Disney. And much love to y'all guys. Much love to you guys. Well, what I'm shook by is not that the visual effects artists are lazy. Like, they're not. They are not. I think Disney is lazy.
That's
Well, the
very true.
corporation. I think the corporation is lazy. I mean, and it's just like, it's just, there's things in this film that it blows my mind that it was achieved. It was achieved. And when I'm looking at this screen and I feel like it's in front of me, in a way that I just can't fathom or just like process.
Yep.
To me, that's just like an achievement on every level.
Done.
But I do understand your story problems, like compared to Avatar, because Dune is more cold, I think, as a story. Like it leaves one going cold than The Way of Water, which has a little more of an upbeat tone towards the end. But that's my thoughts. So I could go on all day.
Real quick, I wanted to know if you saw it in IMAX. So I'm wondering too if that
I have not been able to. I was
no.
very so the screening that we were at that took place like several weeks ago, the IMAX projector was broken, so they put us in a what do you call it? XD, an XD theater. Like it wasn't like terrible, but like it wasn't IMAX.
That's
No.
not fair.
Yeah.
Not to brag, but I saw it at one of the 75mm IMAXs. I this might make people hate me, but I did not see a difference between 75mm IMAX and regular IMAX. Maybe I wasn't looking for it because I was engrossed in the movie, but yeah, aside like I couldn't tell the difference.
Interesting. Well,
It also might be the theater that you were at too. Like sometimes like they don't run it correct.
I'm just curious if like Ben Affleck and Jennifer Lopez were at your screening today, because I know you're in Hollywood, and there's this popular clip of them going around on the internet taking their popcorn and stuff, cleaning up behind them, being good to, movie citizens.
I wish, but no, because I'm not actually in Hollywood. I'm in Orange County, so I'm far enough away that the rich people probably don't come down here that much.
All right, so guys, we've talked a lot about our impressions of Dune 2, and this podcast is all about Dune 2. But I want to know what you thought about Dune 1 before we go any further, and if you had, based on that movie, if you saw it, unlike me, who was unburdened by it, if you had a lot of anticipation for Dune 2, or if you were just kind of meh.
So I also thought Dune Part One was a little bit overrated. I also want to be clear that I mean I've already said that I don't really think that Dune connects with me the same way as other people.
Why do
But I
you
also
hate
want to be
sand?
clear that I do hate sand. I hate it so much. Like every time I see a sand planet in Star Wars, I just die inside. Like
You're gonna like Dune Messiah when it comes out. That's all I'll say.
good. But yeah, with Dune Part One, also, I saw it at a little French indie theater in Montreal. So all of the subtitles, whenever they spoke in like the Sarduakar language and everything, it was all in French. And I could barely grasp what they were saying. So that might have affected my first viewing experience of Dune Part One. But I really liked the vibes. To me, it was like vibes the movie. But I was like, nothing happened, right? And like, if I come across as a Dune hater, it's because I'm a hater on principle. Because
No
I
comment.
was so pissed off when Dune Part One started and it just came up as Part One. Because two-part movies were a great thing in like 2012 to 2015. But for some reason, everyone now wants to make two-part movies without making the Part Two first. Like, there's a difference between two-part movies and regular sequels. And nowadays, people love making part ones. And then they're like, they don't have a part two greenlit. They haven't started working on it. And they're like, it's going to come out in 3 years. That's just a sequel. Then don't make it a two-part movie. So I'm thinking like Mission Impossible, Spider-Verse, Dune. I'm like, guys, no. So I hated Dune Part One on principle for being called Part One, but not having part two greenlit.
See, I think that they had part two greenlit if they did that. There was all this commentary that the director had at the end saying, well, I don't know if we're really going to get a part two. Come on, he got a part two. It was likely a negotiation tactic. They're not going to say part one without having Part Two locked, although it is Warner Brothers, so who knows at
Listen,
this point.
People have done it before. Let's remember the Fallen Divergent series. We never got a Part Two for that. Not that we wanted one, but yeah,
hey,
it's just I really didn't. I also did not like the way that it shifted. It's like in a month up to the release of Dune Part One, it was like, oh, Part Two. And I was like, what? I was like, I thought I was getting a complete movie. So Dune Part One was very much like half a movie to me. And it just kept teasing a bunch of stuff that was going to happen. I want to be clear. I think it's fine that it was half a movie. Like, the world of Dune is very heavy. I think it needed like that much time and respect given to the world building. But I do have to say I have the same feelings about Dune Part 2, where I feel like Dune Part 2 is very middle chapter-y. And a month before Dune Part 2's release, Denis has started saying, you know, are we going to make Messiah? Like, maybe I can't rush perfection. So I'm just like, I'm kind of like, dude, I can't do this.
I think if you look at the 1984 Dune, you know, that was one movie, right? And that covered the first Frank Herbert book. Like, that was rushed. The pacing felt really weird. And I think at least with this, having it set up as two movies and ending, you know, at a point where poor Oscar Isaac, if you haven't seen the first one, that's all I have to say about that. You know, things have a little more to breathe, and we can kind of see Paul's arc from part one through everything that happens in part two. Even in part two, he has an arc.
I'm going to let John speak in just a second because I feel bad. But yeah, the last thing I want to say about on principle, it's also insane to me that you spend five and a half hours adapting one book, and then it's like the baby isn't even born. Like, I don't care why he changed it. I haven't read the book, but I know that Aaliyah plays a big role at the end of Dune Part One, and that, like, she's the one that, or in the first Dune book, I mean, and she's the one that kills the Baron and everything. And so the fact that, like, the baby isn't even born after you spend 5.5 hours adapting a single book, like, I haven't seen the 1984 Dune, so maybe the pacing in that is too rushed, but to me, the pacing in the new ones is too slow.
All I will say, before I let John talk too, I'm sorry, is Napoleon and Rebel Moon. That's all I'm going to say.
I have not seen either.
Hey guys, long time no see.
Sorry, John.
I'm just kidding. I was going to say, I watched Dune Part 1 the way Christopher Nolan intended on HBO Max. That's the way I watched it.
Max Plus One or whatever it is now.
Whatever it's called these days. So I read part of the book leading up to Dune, and it's a hard read, I'm not gonna lie. And when I was going through it, I kind of like understood a little bit why they made that two parts, because like there's so much detail in there that it almost makes you want to punch yourself in the face, like with like how much they put inside there before they even get to the story, right? The meditative aspects of Dune Part 1 didn't really bother me because I'm kind of used to Denis Villeneuve's style. Like, I mean,
were you an Arrival fan?
I love Arrival so much. I love it so much. Like, I adore that movie. And I also like Blade Runner 2049, which is extremely slow burn to a point that, you know, if you're not a Blade Runner fan, you're gonna lose your mind, but I love it. So I was prepared for that aspect, and I think Dune Part 2 kind of like suffers a little bit here and there for being like a little bit slow burn and meditative at times. And I get it, it's not for everybody, it's kind of an acquired taste. And maybe Maybe y'all like slow burns and I'm just being ridiculous, but yeah, anyway.
I
Everyone is in.
actually, sorry, I actually do love slow burns, but I think I'm discovering that I like a very specific type of slow burn because, like, I love Arrival. Like, I think Arrival is excellent. But to me, the Dune movies, like, I don't think they're boring, but there's just something in there that makes me go, like, oh, I like the world, but I just wish something was happening besides, like, staring at sand.
So,
And, well, sorry, go ahead.
no, you go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's pretty much it. I do like slow burns. I think that it's there's just, like I said, there's something about Dune that just doesn't connect with me.
Well, I think Paul Atreides, I'm not saying it correct, Atreides.
You're doing a good job, yeah.
I think he's a very difficult character to connect with. I don't know why y'all.
Intentionally, because that was how Herbert wrote him, I think. People, he was really shocked and dismayed that after reading the novel, people would think of him as like this grand hero because he's not supposed to be likable.
Right, and you're making him the main character, and it's like he's already cold, like on the surface, to like there to be accessible. When so it's hard to like. I think that's a little bit of a hard gateway for some. And I'm not gonna lie, Uday, sometimes Dune can be a little boring. Again. It can be a little boring.
I want to
I
say,
actually.
I want to say though, with like the boringness of Dune, at least you know we've got these beautiful vistas. We've got like the Lawrence of Arabia desert. We've got all this really pretty scenery for to like blow our minds while you know maybe we are waiting for Austin Butler not to lick weird things anymore.
We do have beautiful vistas, but they're all sand. Give me some water.
Dune
I'm kidding. I'm
Messiah.
kidding. I'm kidding. But yeah, the best part of Dune was when he saw some water on Arrakis in that vision. No, I'm kidding. But actually, I think what John was saying about Paul being a cold character and hard to connect with, that's interesting. Because actually, one of my biggest problems with the movie, like I have some subjective issues with the movie, clearly. And again, I have the whole thing about the two-part movie principle that again it still deeply offends me. Two-part movies only work when you release them 1 year apart. Or not only work because this movie is doing very well at the box office,
But
but I
that's so
think work
hard to
best.
do.
No, it's not. If it's a two-part movie, you film it like one movie. If you're going to release it as one movie split in half, then film it as one movie split in half. But
I don't
anyway,
know.
I could have a whole podcast about this.
That's like an Invincible style discussion, or you know, anything on Netflix now that we have to wait for 4 years between seasons, and we don't remember anything that happened previously.
Yeah, but with Paul, I guess like that was one of my big problems with Dune Part 2 is that he is like a likable character that genuinely feels good for so much of the movie. And then I feel like him becoming the Messiah and like becoming like and like doing bad things, like I feel like it came very quickly. I feel like both Paul and Jessica's character arcs like took a very sudden, like sharp turn. And it felt way too rushed for me, considering how slow-paced the movies are. And I guess that part of that is intentional. And like, I know that they both drink the water of life and everything, and that does like open their minds or whatever. But it's just, to me, like drinking the Kool-Aid isn't an excuse to like rush the development that quickly. Like, I know that Jessica believed in the prophecy and was like trying to bring about like the Kwazit Haderach, but she drank the Kool-Aid and then was like immediately like, it's time to convert the non-believers. Like, we're going to start with the weak and like worm our way into their minds. And I was like, whoa, lady.
It is kind of
Like,
a cop out in some ways because it's like what? When you drink the water of life, you get millennia of like pain and anguish and supposedly wisdom, you know, while doing that.
and the thing is, honestly, I feel like that doesn't really come across on screen for me. I feel like I understand how the water of life impacts people because I read about it on Wikipedia after seeing the movie, not because it was really like well explained in the movie. And I rewatched Dune Part 1 while I built the Dune Lego set the night before I saw Part 2, and I liked Dune Part 1 a lot more watching it at home, where I could pause it and look up what was happening, because even though it's a two-part movie, and even though like it is so slow and like so much is explained and like the world is built up, I feel like there's so much that I just don't get from the movies. And that's going to happen with any book to movie adaptation, but for me it's more egregious with Dune, because I feel like these are really important things that I only understand if I go to an outside source.
What do you think, John?
I mean, that was well put. Here's what I really think, okay? Sorry. Here's what I really think. I understand the complaints. I understand the issues. I understand all that. But can we just acknowledge for 5 seconds that Warner Brothers paid, what, like $150 million or so? For a movie that involves draining a worm of its juice,
the water of life,
and drink it like it's just like a Nickelodeon future, like it's, I can't, like, that's why I call this movie a miracle, because like studios don't pay for things like this anymore at all.
I want to make a bucket joke so badly, but I'm not going to make a popcorn bucket joke.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, it's just, it never happens. And Dune by itself, like, is already kind of a risky, like, expense for anyone because of all the weird details inside the book. And I'm just in awe that this happened. Like, that's just what I think, regardless of the issues. But yeah, sorry, what?
I'm curious because, you know, something you said kind of made me think about it. Do you think any other director could have pulled this off? Like, I mean, let's say Christopher Nolan could have, but like any other modern director?
Chris Nolan, yes. I don't think Chris Nolan is weird enough to do this. I don't think he is. He's too...
Have you seen Inception? No.
Inception is like, it's strange, but it's also formal in some ways. Because like every Nolan movie has got a presentation of like being like, it's like, it's science fiction with the tuxedo. You know?
That's a nice way of putting it.
And Dune is like science fiction with acid at times.
So you're saying it's The Boy and the Heron?
A little bit. Only I kind of understand this more than The Boy and the Heron. But that's just kind of how I... Yeah, it's just so weird and crazy and bizarre, and they spent money on it, and gee, oh my gosh, I'm excited about it. So,
if you like films and filmmaking, I agree with that. Like, you know, this is a weird movie about worms that surf in the sand, Uday's favorite place. So, like, we should clap and say it's good that it got made.
That's another thing. There's one sequence in this movie. Okay. I gotta talk about it.
Let's do it.
There's one sequence in this movie where the ship explodes in the background, and then three worms pop up, and there's people running them. What? Like, in the words of Russell Crowe, are you not entertained? Like, it's crazy.
Yep, that's anyway, totally fair.
Yeah, all right. Uday, I'm sorry.
I mean, I was entertained, but...
Sand.
I mean, I don't know. I thought I was going to be more entertained. I don't know.
Do we need to bring up WandaVision or Doctor Strange? Is this what about and being entertained, or is this, are those Not good memories.
Those are not, well, WandaVision was a good memory, the other one not so much. But I don't know. Again, it's like I feel like it's just something wrong with me in that, like, I don't get why. I don't get why it's not hitting the same as everything else. Like, people are describing like Dune Part 2 as like the most epic war movie of all time. I don't feel like it's a war movie because
Nope.
I don't feel like there was a war. Like,
There's a
and this.
battle with Chani, like
But was there even a battle? I'm like, she stabbed two people and it was over. Like,
it
this
wasn't
is so
Ridley
actually,
Scott with, you know.
that's one of my other problems with the movies. Like, the end to me was very unsatisfying. Like I said, it feels very middle chaptery to me. And I feel like the thing with Chani was awesome. And like, yeah, like the way it paralleled Paul's vision from the first movie, like that was really cool. The sandworm riding was amazing, where they like come in like waving like the Atreides banner and everything. But it's just, and I do think that I will say, I think I went in with too high expectations. I think that came from multiple different places. One, all of the reviews and everything, because like, I'm sorry, but whoever thinks that Austin Butler deserves an Oscar nomination doesn't
Oh.
understand why people get Oscars, because that man licked a knife and stabbed some people, and he was excellent, but he's not the best on-screen villain since Heath Ledger's Joker. He barely registers. He's in the movie for like 10 minutes.
This
Like,
is like
I
a whole
agree.
nother discussion about
And
stans and
that's,
people
I
who
agree.
are obsessed with actors. Like, I think that's where that Austin Butler
But
snob is
I
coming
also
from.
feel like it's people from the mo from like book fans, because like someone was like, oh, like look at the like erotic tension in their fight, because like the way that like they're like looking at each other and how intimately they're stabbing each other and how cool that is, given that Paul was supposed to be a girl and he was supposed to marry Fade Rautha to create like the Kwazii-Tadarok. And I'm like, you don't know that watching the movie. You don't know that, like, Paul, you do know that Paul was supposed to be a girl because they mention it in one offhand sentence in the first movie, but you don't know that like the breeding plan was that like Harkonnen and Atreides would like, you know, like have a political marriage and then their child was supposed to be the Messiah. Like, you only know that if you read the Wikipedia page like I did, so, or read the book, I guess. But anyway, that's besides the point. It's just that I do think that part of my expectations being high came from like all the reviews and all of that stuff. But then also part of it came from the first movie, because the first movie, like, because these movies spend so long teasing you with the visions of the future. And someone said, like, you can't spoil Dune because you know what's going to happen. It's like seeing the journey that's like most exciting. But for me, it's like the journey isn't satisfying, because like this whole time I'm like, oh my God, like how's Paul going to become the Messiah? Like, he's so resistant to it. Like, how are these things going to happen? And then they just like happen so quickly, and it's like I feel like they go without any impact. Like, he sees these visions of the future that are super dramatic, and I'm like, oh my God, like that looks so emotional. And then the things happen, and I feel like they don't have any emotional weight to them.
I want to jump in on the idea that you mentioned and kind of grab onto that you can't spoil Dune, because there are books, because of whatever. And I totally disagree with that idea, because I think, a movie, a book adaptation should be able to stand alone. Any story should be able to stand alone, and that's one of like the fundamental things of being just like an entertaining story. If like you said, you need Wikipedia or whatever to understand like the third dimension. Twice removed times five, then something is missing. But is that really necessary too at the same time? I think that for me, Dune Part Two, some of the stuff that like I agree, I loved all the technical stuff. I was like awed by this film in so many ways, but just some of the character stuff didn't quite feel earned. And that's what
Yeah.
I'm big on. Like, I think you have to earn the ending instead of just like magically waving a wand and getting what your
Exactly.
characters want.
That's how I feel. I thought the characters were more complex in Dune Part 1 than in Dune Part 2. I feel like Paul and his mother both became like cardboard cutouts by the end, especially his mom. I did not like I like I figured where her character was going to go from what I knew of the Dune franchise and like her involvement with like the prophecy. But again, it's like the journey was not satisfying to me. But the thing, sorry, I wanted to circle back. People weren't saying that you can't spoil Dune because there's a book. They were saying you can't spoil Dune because they tell you from the beginning what's going to happen to Paul. So they were like, because Like, you know he's going to become the Messiah, like, because of these visions he's having. But again, it's just like we're two movies into this Dune trilogy, I guess, now. And it's like, I'm still waiting to see anything as impressive in the present day as the visions that we see of the future. Because now that Dune Part 2 has come and gone, we've, like, some of those visions have come true. But it's like, yeah, the way they're executed in the present day is not as impactful as the visions are.
Well, they've come true and they've changed a little bit, right? I'm thinking of that, again, that battle or war, whatever we would call it, with Johnny, you know, being there instead of Paul. But John, I wanted to, you know, find out what your take on this, any of this was.
Which part? We covered a lot right there. Let's see, I mean, as far as Austin Butler, I think he looks phenomenal without eyebrows. Like, that's how I feel about it. He's a good villain, and that's about all I gotta say. It's not Heath Ledger at all, but it's good. But we're going to give a complaint about it, and I kind of like talked about it in the review, is that the part that I didn't buy throughout the movie, and I'm not sure what y'all think, you know, there's two factions of this Fremen, right? There's like the North and South, and they talk about how the North believes one thing and the South believes another.
Like the fighting and religious, right? That's basically right. The difference.
Yeah. And several times in the movie, they tell me, well, they tell the viewer that that the people that believe in the Messiah fear Paul. And I never, ever got there with that.
Mm.
Like, I mean, like, Timothée Chalamet, you know, he does a good performance. Like when he has to come in an army, holy hell, I was like, okay, good job, well done. But at no point in the entire film did I think anybody was afraid of him. He's a little guy, Stilgar is this huge guy, and I never like was like, yeah, Stilgar's afraid of Timothée Chalamet. Come on now. So I never got that with the story. At least, well, just with the performances. And that part of it did not translate well to me. I don't know what y'all think.
I agree. I don't find Timothée Chalamet as a particularly strong leading man. And that's probably controversial. Like, I think that he, you know, he's not well matched to Javier Bardem in this movie, or Stilgar rather.
No, it's Javier Bardem. I mean, that guy. Like, I didn't buy it.
I think that he did get scary at the end for me. Like, yeah, like when he has his whole speech and he's rising up to become the Lisan al Ghaib. Yeah, but again, it felt very unearned to me because I'm like, you didn't want to do this. Then you drink the worm juice, you see Anya Taylor-Joy, and then you're like, hey guys, let's have white supremacy. Like, it also, that was a joke, but like.
We got it.
Yeah, no, I just want to be clear for everyone listening.
Yeah. I mean,
there is an element of that, but it's just like, that's the thing to me. It's like, I understand the point of these things. I understand that it's about, you know, how an outsider comes in and like colonizes them and like takes control of the universe. And I understand that, like, you know, it's like the power of religion and everything, but it's literally a cult. They literally drink the Kool-Aid and then they like start a cult. And I know that that's the point, but I'm just like, it's so like, again, like there's a disconnect there. So that's why I want to read the book. I want to see if the book is giving me the layers that I'm missing from the movie, because I think there's three characters in this movie that lose all their nuance. And for me, that's Jessica, Paul, and Stilgar. And I know that Stilgar wasn't in the first movie much, but he went into like this really weird place in the second movie where he was so comedic and so fanatical. And you don't get any sense of that in the first movie.
Yes.
Even like Paul arrives on Arrakis and people are like chanting Lisan al-Ghaib. And like, you can see that people care about this prophecy. And Stilgar is in multiple scenes in the movie. And I don't even know if he mentions like the Lisan al-Ghaib. I think he does like at the end, but there's no hint in like part one of like that kind of religious fanaticism. And then in the second movie, he's just like this comedic, like comic relief hype man for Paul. And so it's like, it really wasn't what I was expecting. And to me, it's very jarring.
And I mean, when you look at Paul in the movie, do you think, oh man, that's Messiah, you know?
See Wonka, sorry.
I actually haven't seen Wonka, but I could see, I buy Timothy Chalamet in this role. I do, especially in part two, I do buy him because that's the point, right? Paul is not like physically imposing. Paul is just smart and trained in like the ways of the Bene Gesserit, and he's like,
yeah, but
and he's the outsider that's worshipped.
But what I'm saying is, like, I understand, like, he, like, you know, Chalamet's a great actor. He's a great performer. He could, like, make a lot of things, like, believable. But I just didn't believe all these other people were, I just didn't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't buy it. Like, you know, and kind of like you said, the, that Indian speech is awesome. It's great. There is no critiques on how he did that speech. I still don't believe that man, that it, like if he were a real person right now, like in real life, I don't believe anybody would follow that guy.
I wonder too if, you know, if it part of his, maybe we all just don't see his appeal, or maybe you do, Dad. I don't know, like, because like it's an age thing almost. Like he skews much, much younger. I don't know. But he just seems like a kid to me.
But I have to be honest, like if there was a figure like that, like in modern day America, I can totally see people following him. And mm-hmm. for different reasons, maybe, but it's like there is something, right? Like about that outsider coming in. And so like it doesn't matter that he's a kid. It matters that, well, like one, he showed up with his mom, right? And so it's like that's like the coming of the Lisan al-Ghaib is like the mother and the son. But it's also just like that power of idealizing an outsider where it's like that's the outsider. And so it doesn't matter how he looks. It's like he looks different from you. And so it's like, and you've been hearing prophecies for thousands of years about how this outsider is going to come and lead you to paradise. And so It works for me, I have to be honest.
Well, that's what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about what works and what doesn't work.
And I'm glad it worked for you, definitely. I'm glad it worked for you.
So we've talked about him. Have we really talked about Rebecca Ferguson at all? Do we want to talk about Jessica and say, do we buy her in this in this part of the movie? Do we think that we're satisfied with her character arc? Do we think we're satisfied with, you know, what's going on with her and her magical weird little baby?
I didn't understand anything that was going on with that, so I don't have any comment. Like, I kind of like today I would probably need clip notes to understand what was happening. I was just like marveling how weird it was in a blockbuster. That was the only thing that I took away.
Yeah, all the fetus shots. I have to say that, again, I haven't seen Dune Part 2 more than once, so maybe I need to see it again.
I'm shocked.
But I feel like they Listen, I'll watch some movies so many times in theaters, but like Dune Part Two, I think I'd only go again because my coworkers want to see it again. But maybe not. I kind of am interested in seeing it again because I want to see if some of these things really weren't put in the movie well enough for me. Because it's like, also for me, I feel like I only understand the baby thing because, again, I read stuff on Wikipedia after the movie ended. So it's like the water of life awakened Aaliyah's consciousness before her birth. So, but
She's
to
like
me,
a
that
grown
doesn't.
person
Yeah,
in,
but like that
with
doesn't
a
make sense. Like there's a difference between awakening a baby's consciousness and giving her the mind of a full-grown woman just because you drink some like worm juice. Like, and again, that's something we can get past. It's sci-fi, it's weird, it's fine. But I don't
drink the
know. To
worms.
me, I also like, not to get political, but I was thinking about this during the movie. It did have a very strange kind of like vibe, especially showing like the fetus shots where it's like it felt like a weird little like pro-life stance at points where it's like, like fetuses are like fully conscious human beings. And I don't think that that is like what was intended in the 80s, but it's like that's how it came across to me in like today's political climate. And also considering like the Marilyn Monroe thing with like her talking to her fetus in Blonde.
Oh.
There's
Now, I
been a
haven't
lot of
seen
fear.
Blonde, so I can't
Neither did
comment,
I,
but
but I heard I saw like the scenes of her talking to her fetus, and it was like had eyes and stuff, and was like there were like there was a lot of like in utero shots, so I find that interesting.
well, what about well, moving on a little bit from, unless John, do you have anything you want to add on to that?
I mean, no, I've like if if you get a pro-life like takeaway from it, I think that's, that's an honest take. I don't know Denis Villeneuve's politics. I mean, he's Canadian, so I'm not sure what how he feels up there. I have like a weird like total recall vibe from it, kind of like a. Did y'all see the 80s Total Recall by chance? Do you know what I'm talking about? Okay, so Uday shaking his head. Okay, so in Total Recall, Uday, there's a part where this guy like takes off his vest and there's like this weird like baby tumor attached to him that's like talking. You know what I'm talking about?
I'm trying to
Yeah.
bring up a picture of it
It's like
because I think we need.
Quato? Is it Quato? I can't remember his name. But like I have like weird total recall
It's
vibes. I'm like,
Quado, yeah.
that's what it kind of like reminded me of. But even though I did not understand a thing what was going on. And still don't. But that was my takeaway. I was like, man, this is weird. I love weird. Give me all the weird in the world.
You are
And
a true sci-fi person.
I do. Like, it's the same thing with like I'm not trying to go on a Marvel kick, but
No, well, I mean, we are a comic book loving website, so I think it's fair to talk about Marvel for anything.
it's kind of like Loki. I love how weird Loki is, like all the time. Like, just make all cinema weird, please. I want it to be weird all the time.
I love that. I think that's a wonderful sentiment. And I know we have about 10 minutes left, because this podcast has just kind of flown by. And I want to talk about some of the positive too. We spent a lot of time talking about things maybe that didn't quite work for us, or things that were weird in a not great way. I would love to talk about things that you think were just really, really mind-blowingly good. If you have any top specific moments, besides Austin Butler's lack of eyebrows, I want to hear them.
Uday, I want to hear all your top 5 moments of Dune. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just playing. No, go ahead though, man. Go ahead.
Well, I'm thinking we haven't talked about Florence Pugh. She was
We haven't.
good. I really liked her outfits. I thought that they were really cool. I thought it was interesting to like learn a little bit more about the Emperor. But again, like her character just feels a little bit like she doesn't matter yet. You know, it's like she's being set up for something, and that's what like both she and Denis have said. But yeah, so I feel like it's kind of hard to read her, I guess. I'm like, oh, it's Florence Pugh. I'm always happy to see her. And I'm still interested in the Bene Gesserit. So like I know that there's a Dune prequel series coming out in late 2024 on Max.
Supposedly, I know like the last
Supposedly.
update was 2019, and then life happens in between all of that, so.
So like I was looking it up, like they filmed it and everything, like very quietly. But they also retitled it. It's not called Dune the Sisterhood anymore. It's called Dune Prophecy, which sounds super generic. And I don't really know how to feel about it because it sounds like it's had like some production troubles. But like on paper, I'm very interested in digging more into the Bene Gesserit because like I love that moment at the end when Rebecca Ferguson and Charlotte Rampling, I think her name is, that plays the lead like Bene Gesserit. I loved when they like were in the same room and were having like a reverend mother off. So I don't know, like I want to know more about that like side of the world. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I want to know more about the world of Dune, but I feel like I'm just not being satisfied by the story that's being told.
We were supposed to be
Sorry, it's all mixed up
positive.
together for me. It's like there's stuff that's so good, but then it's just like it's not that stuff is bad. It's just like I think I just need to read the books, to be perfectly honest. Like I can't think of any like really other like standout moments. I mean, I really liked all the visions, like Rebecca Ferguson leading Paul into the religious south. That was a great vision. Kind of disappointed that, well, no, we're being positive. But I was going to say, kind of disappointed that we didn't get that in real life.
I will add something. You mentioned Florence Pugh. I think that, compared to the books, I think that, and today's International Women's Day, so it's like totally appropriate. I think that the women in Dune, for all the problems that we've talked about already, I think they were more balanced in the story than, previously. And I think they were more of, I think that there was an attempt to counterbalance the white savior narrative, and I think that's what we
Yeah, for
got a
sure.
little, what we got a little bit with Rebecca Ferguson's Jessica, and with Princess Arylan, and Lea Seydoux's character, who I'm completely forgetting the name of it, even though she's only on screen for a tiny bit, and did that one interesting thing. I'm avoiding spoilers. I think there was an effort made to make it less Messiah, even though it is a story about, a Messiah character.
And I was gonna say, I don't know how we've gotten in here, like so deep into here without talking about Zendaya, but
Oh crap. Yes,
I
Tani and
was
Zendaya. Like that is a huge oversight. She is.
she did a great job, but yeah, like just from again, like from what I know of the Dune book, like it seems like she's been given much more agency as a character, which I find very interesting and I'm very appreciative of. Because I know what happens in Dune Messiah. And what a waste of Zendaya that would be. So I really hope like there are some people saying that like we're really set up to go in an interesting direction with Messiah that can be different from like what the book did, because they can't see a way that like the Messiah storyline plays out given how Dune Part 2 ended with Chani. And so I'm personally very excited about that.
And how it ended with her is, she went off, she had that blue ribbon, which apparently means she's pregnant. I had to look this up and find out afterwards, which is kind of similar to the books, right? To Dune, Messiah. So I totally agree. It's such an oversight not to have mentioned her. She is such a she again, she's a counterbalance to him. She's the fighter, she's the skeptic. There's that giant speech where he's, growing, well, arguably growing into his character and this figure after he's, been in his coma, and she starts off as a non-believer, and then like he convinces her as a believer, but then at the end again she's a skeptic. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with her.
I would say that the parts that I liked were there's a sequence where Zendaya and Timothée Chalamet are like hiding behind the legs of a machine as this flying thing, like flying vehicle, is like shooting at them. And at one point, the cinematography switches to the POV of the gunner, and you're just looking down over this like planet with all the vehicles on the ground. I could have lived in that moment. I just thought it was gorgeous the way it looked. That's one part that like I deeply enjoyed. Christopher Walken. I mean, he didn't really do very much. I don't think he's like great in it, but I like Christopher Walken in anything anyway. Yeah, just the special effects, guys. I mean, I think I'm one of those like movie watchers that like really loves being immersed in an environment, and I just love the immersive feel of the film, even if the vibes were not totally there throughout. But the immersive nature of the way it, like the art design, the special effects, just the cinematography. Guys, the cinematography in this thing, it's insane.
And the cinematographer was Greg something or other, right? Is it Fraser? I'm forgetting his name.
Greg Fraser, I think. Fraser.
And he like plays with lights in such an interesting way.
Like he did the Batman and he did another film. Every movie, like he is like up notch, like on par to possibly be the next Roger Deakins.
He's won an Oscar, right? Or just nominated, I don't remember.
He has, I cannot remember, to be honest. I cannot remember, but he's really good. But that was the stuff that I liked, so.
Well, I think that brings us to the end, unless there are any final thoughts that you want, everyone out there listening to know about Dune Part 2. There's silence. I feel
It
like I should.
was your Dave's favorite movie of all time, right?
By default, it was the best movie of the year so
Is
far.
it
I
the
think
only
it's
one you've
gonna.
seen?
No, but I mean, it's
No.
competition. It's competition is Mean Girls and Madame Web. So, like, come on,
I have
Dune is
so
the
many
top movie of
thoughts.
2024.
Yeah.
But I think Dune will remain the top movie of 2024 for a while. I don't know what's gonna
You should go see Dee
be
Dee, but
thrown.
that's a different category of movie.
Maybe like Deadpool 3 is the only thing that I could think of that might compete with it this
I
year, like as
honestly
far as like making a lot of money. It's gonna be a very
have.
slow year,
It
I think.
is. I have doubts about Deadpool 3 though. Like, it's hard
For
to. I mean,
another
you're not
podcast.
alone. You're not
It's.
alone.
I was more hyped for Dune Part 2 than I've been hyped for anything Marvel related in like over a year.
I believe that.
And you guys know how I feel about Dune.
And the sand. All right, so thank you all for being here and listening to us as we talked about Dune and how much we really love sand and only sand and nothing else but that. We could talk for many, many more hours, but we have to wrap it up. So who are you people? Why are you here? And where can we find you?
I'm Uday. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube at GoldenNinja3000. As for why I'm here, it's because I wanted to talk Dune with you lovely folk.
It
It was a really fun conversation, you guys. I had a lot of fun. I am John Dotson. And you can find my work at The Cosmic Circus. And you can find me on Twitter at JohnMovieWatch.
And I'm Isla Ruby. You can find me on Twitter at TULIN Writes. And again, this has been The Cosmic Circle, the official companion podcast to thecosmiccircus.com. Have a wonderful night, everyone. Or day. I don't know. It's all mixed up. Bye-bye.